Commission of the Port of Houston Authority on Thursday, October 27, 2022 at 9:15 a.m. So meeting is called to order. I'll just start out the meeting today just with some really quick remarks. I just want to thank everyone connected with Port Houston in our operation, from our dock workers, our people in the office, the ILA, our seafarers folks, the pilots, because we had an audit committee meeting on Monday, and I thought there was a typo in the numbers. I've seen that. I know we're up 20+% in containers, and all of our tonnages are up, and that's interesting when you look at other ports around the country, because a lot of them are down, and we're up substantially relative to other ports, and that's creating a very difficult situation for all of our teams, you know, working at the port and getting cargo ultimately delivered to consumers. And so when I looked at those numbers, I was like, wow, I knew we were up, but oh my gosh. And I want to share just two of those numbers with you. The first one was our budgeted cash flow for through the first 9 months of the year through September 30th. Now, budgeted cash flow, you know, it's sort of like earnings, but we add back depreciation. I'm not going to give you an accounting lesson, but one of the most important numbers that you can look on a financial statement. And our actual cash flow was $274 million compared to a budget of $160. That's a 71% outperformance of our budget. Now, what that tells me is that people are working really hard at the port, because in order to exceed what we thought we were going to do at the beginning of the year by that much, that means that there's a lot more work going on. There's a lot more activity happening, and that's really important. And so I just wanted to give a shout out to everyone who's driving that number. Now, those numbers are really important because, if you recall, we committed nearly $750 million of port money for Project 11. And part of that was financed by bonds that we issued in a very timely way that our finance group did in last year before interest rates went up big time. And so this additional cash flow allows us then to use free cash flow, or cash flow we generate from our operations, to actually make more investments in the landside port infrastructure and fund the channel. So really important and really great fun numbers to be able to cheer about. So I just want to thank everybody at the port for that. And then one other thing, I know Roger usually talks about tenure awards, and I got to sign my first congratulatory anniversary ever as a port, as the chairman of the port commission. And I signed it for Roger, who had his 35th anniversary. Did you get that letter yet?
No, I hadn't got the letter.
What happened to it? I signed it. Okay, well, maybe that's a...
It's coming up.
You know when it's 35, so I signed the letter, so I figured it was now. So I had to give him a... A shout out.
Yeah, when I was 12.
And so. Usually when I sign my own for my own company, it's pretty funny, right? I write myself a note, and it's really great. But Roger, congratulations, and thanks for all your hard work.
Thank you.
That's all I have. Any commissioners want to opine on anything before we get started? Okay. Okay, let's go then to item C1, which is the approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. Now let's move then to staff reports. Roger.
Yes, good morning. Just a lot more of the same. Really busy, you know, through our across our public terminals or whatever. You know, the you hear about some of the softening of the movement of goods in the supply chain, especially in the imports or whatever across the country. We still haven't experienced that yet here in Houston. You know, our volume is up 18% for the year in total. That is really strong compared to a lot of other ports in the country. And, you know, in fact, it's not slowing down, because September was the second highest month that we've ever had after August. So containers are, you know, imports and exports are starting to pick up as well. So Jeff will give you a little bit more about that coming up. But hey, we're still strong. And general cargo, again, just looking out the window, we were talking about it earlier, pipe, import steel, cement, all the things that we continue to import through the Tarnum Basin, and still got ships waiting to come in. So anyway, things are good. Supply chain isn't broken. It's challenged a little bit, but we're still moving goods. Really, the only one of the other things I want to talk about is something that really was a great event that happened this week. It was Monday. We had our inaugural Houston International Maritime Conference. It's something that we've been talking about doing prior to the pandemic. And it is, you know, we had about 250 participants at this thing from, and it was all Houston centric. Our ocean carriers, BCOs, exporters, stevedores, truckers, labor, a great event, and not one to just have an infomercial about the port. It's about, hey, let's talk about the things that are going on in the supply chain on these different panels, and how we can do better moving forward. We had economists talking about, hey, what they think about, you know, Houston looks like, which continues to be bright compared to the rest of the country. So it was a good event. It was a one-day event. Look for this thing to get larger next year, but there's a lot of people that participated, very pleased, wanting to be a sponsor and participant for next year, and really just a coming together of our industry here in Houston with a lot of takeaways and a lot of things that we need to include as we strategically prepare to go forward. So, again, congratulations to, you know, the commercial division, John and your group, putting this thing together. You know, I don't like to single out people, but I've been told by several people that that Fatima De Leon is the one that really supercharged this thing and put it together, and it was very well done. A lot of our people were participating, moderating panels, participating in panels along with our stakeholders, and very well received, and I was really proud of how that thing turned out. So I look forward to expanding that and growing that, and you know, it's all about partnership, and I think that's why we continue to be successful here in Houston, is the partnership with that industry that we serve. And it's all about us being able to make sure that we're moving our customers' cargo across our docks as efficiently as possible so they remain competitive. That's what it boils down to. So anyway, John, thank you for that and your group and everybody that participated in this. It was very well done. And the last thing, real quick, I have a recognition, Chairman, that actually occurred last month, but we have us today, Barbara Smith, please stand up. She is celebrating a project manager at Port Houston, been here as civil engineer initially, been in with our department celebrating 40 years with Port Houston. And thank you very much for your service and 40 years.
You must have started at 5.
Wow. So anyway, that's all I have, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to say I attended that conference Monday, and I was really, really impressed. Everybody seems to think things are going to slow down, but everything I heard in that conference was, it's going to slow down, but Houston's going to keep going. Mm-hmm. The economist was very high on what's going to happen. So whatever we're doing, we got to keep doing it because we're being successful. And I know we got a lot of infrastructure needs, and we're going to address them, I guess, next month when we have our meeting. But Houston's future looks great. And the only thing I want to say about the conference is how impressed I was the port employees. This was a professional conference, and it was done all by our people. And I am so happy to see the young folks that works for the Port of Houston. I'm not talking about the old folks because I'm one of them, but the young people that works for this port are the most professional, the most polite, and I am just thrilled to have them part of this port.
Great.
Awesome, thank you. Any other comments, commissioners? Okay, well, let's go then to appearances for public comment. We have two people that have signed up. We have Ellie Nasser of Environmental Defense Fund. Are you here or online? Here you are. Go ahead.
Online, can you see me and hear me?
Yes, you're good.
Great, thank you. Thanks for accommodating the technology. Good morning, commissioners and staff. Again, my name is Ellie Nasser. I'm the senior manager for climate and health at the Environmental Defense Fund, and I appreciate the chance to speak this morning. I just wanted to share for some context, I just completed a 5-month national landscape analysis of ports across the country, really looking to better understand how ports are moving towards a zero emission technology transition. What was clear in that exercise is that there's great diversity across the country in efforts of what ports are doing on this front. But I think the salient point is that the analysis demonstrated that the ports that are investing in sustainability, that have, you know, meaningful stakeholder engagement opportunities and clear targets and goals, are those that have also really demonstrated the ability to mobilize more federal dollars to continue those programs. And so, you know, with the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, in addition to the IIJA, I don't have to tell you that there are billions, literally billions of dollars that will be kind of focused, coming forward and focused on that effort to clean up ports over the coming years. And so, you know, we at EDF, as well as I'm sure you and your team, want to see as many of those dollars come to Port Houston as possible. And simultaneously, we'd also like to see the efforts by the ports, by the port itself, you know, make investments in those air quality mitigation programs, which feels possible at this point, especially given the actual cash flow numbers that you just shared at the top of the meeting. I requested to speak this morning really in advance of your November budget meeting to again make a request, as we did last year, to make your budget process for the environmental and sustainability programs more transparent. We have been informed that the environmental and sustainability funding is sort of peppered throughout the budget. We would like to suggest that the budget is really an opportunity to tell the story about the organization's efforts. Without evidence really for us to point to about specific capital investments such as retrofitting or swapping out pollution, polluting equipment, or investments in CASP implementation or other air quality specific programs, it's difficult to actually show what the port's doing on this front. We know there's been a lot of planning underway on the net zero goal that that you all made in April. We've been engaged and had some very productive conversations with Trey and Rich and their teams on this topic. But again, without clear funding for the carbon emission reduction programs, it's difficult to see how those targets and goals can be met for the net zero operations by 2050. And again, in advance of the budget meeting, please consider including specific carve outs for air quality and sustainability programs that really demonstrate the port's commitments that you've already made to these programs, and make the case also for continued funding in the future for federal dollars that are coming down the pipeline. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Any questions or comments, commissioners?
Can those be pulled up?
Yes, go ahead. What's that?
Can we flag those items in the budget?
Yes, that will be included.
Yeah, they're going to be identified in the budget.
Good deal.
Maybe even a section that highlights all of them in one place, right? So yeah, you can see them.
Okay. Seems like it's very doable.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah. Great. Okay, our next speaker is Alondra Torres of the Airlines Houston. So, Alondra, I see your name. Now I see you. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. My name is Alondra Torres. I am a climate justice coordinator with Airlines Houston. Thank you so much for having me today. In a June meeting earlier this year, the port made an incredible commitment to the community to pursue the use of clean dredging technology in Project 11. Now we're seeing that commitment being undermined by the Army Corps as they take on the later phases of the project. We are disappointed, but we see a great potential for the port to ensure and urge the Corps to adopt the same commitment, especially because the port is contributing about $42 million to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for fiscal year 2023 for Project 11. We see the value of the port and acknowledge that it has an integral role in job creation for the community and beyond. There is no doubt about that. However, the health implications of pollution caused by dredging and by expansion projects by the port are indisputable. Particulate matter is known to cause adverse cardiac and respiratory events, and ozone can similarly affect those with asthma. As my colleague Ilu Nasser has stated in the past, community is paying for the project with their health. The HARC Advanced Research Center concluded that a worst-case scenario year of dredge work could increase regional health expenses by $115 million. We want to work with the port to protect communities. We want full transparency in what the $42 million is funding, and we also want the port to model integrity and follow through with their commitment. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. And commissioners, any questions or comments? I know we have orchestrated meetings with the Corps and with various groups, and we'll continue to work on this issue for sure. Okay, I think that's it. Eric, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's now move on to the executive item F. Eric, I think you're going to take us through that, right? I think that's what my notes
say. Yes. Oh, well,
you're up.
Well, the first item is just our annual re-upping. I mean, our every 3 years we re-up our contract with Thomson Reuters for online legal research. And it's, as you can see, it's $192,000. We obviously, lawyers know Westlaw has been the series of books that are used, you know, for 100 plus years. But nowadays, in lieu of books, we mostly do online research. And this pays for some, you know, some of us older folks still like to look at books occasionally. But generally speaking, the bulk of this cost, you know, probably more than three quarters, close to 7/8, is for the online research. So that's the first item. The second item is our three amendments to Port Commission policy. Briefly describe what those are. They were reviewed by the Governance Committee, and then we bring them to the Commission for approval. The bylaws, just very quickly, the bylaws were last amended in November of 2013. That year they went through several iterations. This review is really, or these changes are really, first of all, to update the bylaws to reflect some statutes that have been passed since that time. Also, to return the delegation for certain external relations authority to staff at the time that the prior chairman was more of a hands-on on some of those things. So we're bringing it back to the way it was originally conceived. We also had an issue, and the commissioners will recall, we had some ambiguous language which we had not realized was ambiguous until an instance came up of how many times can an item be deferred, and so that language has been clarified. And then, as you're all aware, we've sort of updated our task forces, and we now have just committees as opposed to task forces, and we, of course, have an item a couple years ago, where a year and a half ago, where we changed the small business task force to the Business Equity Committee. So those are the changes. You have a red line in the briefing book that shows those changes. Code of Ethics is probably a little less substantive. That's last been amended in June of 2015, and these are really just to address some issues that have come up, some ambiguity. We updated staff position descriptions, the definition of honoraria, some disclosure situations where a commissioner or the executive director had a contract with a family member, which to my knowledge hasn't happened. But in any event, looking forward to that. And then finally, there's a lot of this refers to what benefits can be received, what can be received, and nepotism. We've updated those. The last briefing we presented in June basically reflected some of these updates, even though they were not enacted. And then finally, the public comment policy is really just to bring it to the reality of the world we are in right now. As we all know, last couple of years we had something called COVID. We were doing first virtual meetings, and now we have hybrid meetings. The policy, which was last amendment in 2015, didn't reflect that. And so we've made some changes to reflect that. And then the statute, the Open Meetings Act statute, has some provisions as well. We wanted to update those. I think the main change that we've put in place was we had before several different
meeting time requirements, depending on whether you were commenting on items on the agenda or not. And what we've adopted in the last few years is just a common scenario where people have 3 minutes, and this reflects that. And with that, if you have any questions, happy to answer them. Those are the changes.
Move for approval.
Second.
Questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Okay, we have no items on business equity this time. Commercial, John, are you going to take us through that?
Fantastic. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ladies and gentlemen. Happy to be here in front of you today, presenting on behalf of the Portsmouth Commercial Division. Basically, we have 5 items in front of you. 2 of them are economic development and trade development related, and then the last 3 are real estate related. But before I go into this, I just wanted to share a little bit of commercial perspective in terms of outlook, overall outlook for the business. Not to steal Jeff's thunder or what was already mentioned this morning by you, Chairman Roger, but you know, things are looking solid. There's been a systemic shift over the last year or two where we've seen a lot of new distribution centers opening up in this area. I've said this before, but the outlook, I just want to say, is very promising because the cargo base has shifted here in a fundamental way. So as you see the numbers change over the next few months, I think the outlook is going to be positive for us in the container business for sure. But with that, I wanted to really just highlight two particular items that I have in front of you for your consideration. The first one is a request to contract with Sergio Ojeda Osa for our representative to cover Latin America. Latin America comprises 20% of our business. It's an important market for us. And after an exhaustive number of candidates we looked at, we're looking at suggesting Sergio Ojeda Osa to represent us in Latin America. The second item is item number H3 I wanted to draw your attention to. We'd like to request an increase in our month-to-month rate. We've also established a couple of additional tiers in our month-to-month rate structure to better identify, you know, unimproved or stabilized or different levels of properties. And so with that, I could take some questions, but I'd like to request a future approval for items H1 through H5.
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments, Commissioners?
Yeah, I'd like to ask, John, the only increases in is for the month-to-month leases.
Yes,
is
that sir. Right?
Is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, based on market conditions.
Right.
And the fact that we're at full occupancy.
Okay.
Essentially, yeah. What else does the Greater Houston Partnership do for us? I know that they furnish some information, but I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah. So they're the largest chamber of commerce in the region, essentially, and we are participating on a number of different activities with the GHP, from the board down to professional committees. We're aligned along a number of different items when it comes to economic development activities, attracting business, promoting Houston, promoting the port along different lines.
Any other questions? Okay, any other, hearing no other questions, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, items 1 through 5 passed.
Thank you.
Mr. Finley, you're up.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for your time this morning. 5 items for finance this morning. I'll go through very briefly. Please don't hesitate to stop me if you have any questions. Item I-1 was reviewed and recommended for your approval by the audit committee last week. This contract and the underlying reviews and processes have been in place for a number of years, wherein the vendor is compensated a percentage of the recoveries they obtain for the Port Authority. Historically, the amount that they've retained has been below the $50,000 threshold. This period under review was 2019 through 2021, and the net that they would retain this year would be $65,600. Which is the amount for you today for the agenda item. Item I-2 represents the exercise of contract options with our external auditors, Forbes, for fees incurred for this year and for next year, which are years 2 and 3 of our agreement with Forbes. Fees associated with the financial statement audit and the P&D audit are paid from our general fund. That's roughly $300,000. Whereas the fees for the pension plan audit and the OPEB trust audit this year are paid for their respective plan or trust assets. Round numbers, that's about $50,000 of the $350,000 you see before you. This contract was considered exempt from business equity requirements, but I'm happy to say that for the last 3 years, Forbes has exercised about 10% of minority firm opportunity on their contracts. And this year, with the OPEB trust audit, about 50% of those fees will be with minority firms. So we're really pleased with their participation in that program.
Hey, Tim, could I ask real quick, how does that work on an audit situation? Do the minority firms, how are they able to participate?
They carve out a specific section of the audit, like fixed assets.
And then they assign it.
And they perform that under the audit plan of the external auditor.
Okay. I didn't know that they were able to, I guess, subcontract out of an audit. I hadn't heard that before.
Yes. Okay. Item 3, along those lines, perhaps, item 3 represents the 2023 internal audit plan compiled by our chief audit executive, Sharon Williams, and her team, and this was recommended again for your approval by the audit committee last week. Item 4 relates to the court's other post-employment benefits, or OPEB trust, which as of September 30 had a pro forma funded ratio of 151%, meaning assets in excess of the actuarially determined liability to our work beneficiaries. This request will provide the staff the ability to adjust or eliminate a payment to the trust only if that funded ratio is equal to or greater than 125%. Clearly, the first priority is to ensure adequate assets are in place to sustain the benefits to beneficiaries, hence the floor of an excess position of 125% or any action is considered. The rationale for this is largely that these contributions, which average just under $3 million annually, are irrevocable. So it doesn't make good cash management sense to continue to fund if we're in a clear excess position at that point. Clearly, when we're in that position, we will get counsel of our investment advisors and our actuaries to make sure that it is a sound policy. But again, today, very solid position, given even the market that we've been through this year. So we think this is a very good move. And then lastly, item I-5 is an administrative item required by the Water Code to name the individual responsible to receive proposals. We'll be going out next month with the solicitation for banking services for the Port Authority. We expect to conclude that in January. And this, we need to have a name for someone to receive those proposals from the institution. So
that's going to be you, right?
And that would be me.
Okay.
Mostly fine. That would be me. And that's all I have. Any questions?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second. Okay, any other questions or comments?
Minority firm.
Oh, go ahead.
Lacey New Day.
Lacey New Day.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, I-5 pass.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is Rich Burns, Infrastructure.
Morning. This has been a very busy week. Before I go through the items, just want to highlight a few things that are happening. Besides the Houston International Maritime Conference, on Tuesday, we spoke before the Urban Land Institute to talk about the importance of resilient infrastructure. And also, we spoke at the South Texas Transportation Summit talking about Project 11, promoting the benefits of that as well as the Coastal Protection Program. And then Wednesday, last night through tomorrow, is the National Waterways Conference, which the port is sponsoring. So a lot going on, a lot in the name of promoting regional prosperity. And last night and today is the Blue Sky Maritime Coalition's annual general meeting, which we are a founding member of. And that speaks a little bit to this idea of going after grants monies and things like that. Not every dollar in the Jobs Act has to come to Fort Houston. We're supporting those dollars going to other agencies like the Center for Houston's Futures, Hydrogen Hub idea, as well as Blue Sky Maritime, focusing on innovation. So just some context there. Today, there are 17 items on the agenda under the infrastructure item or list, representing about $52 million in requests. I'll highlight a couple of them. Item J2 is a construction contract for phase two of the Barber's Cut West End pop-up yard. You previously awarded the contract for the first half of that property to repurpose it to new RTG runs, and Jeff can tell us more about the importance of that. This is for a contiguous additional 12 acres to complete that property. Items 10 to 13 are all channel-related projects representing ongoing management of Project 11, which is really a series of whack-a-mole challenges when we interact with the dredging contractors as well as the Army Corps and other stakeholders. There are change orders to contracts with Great Lakes and Curtin to apply their equipment and skills in the most productive and economical way. Specifically, item 10 is a change order to Great Lakes, changing out the equipment they're going to use for a small section in segment 1A. It's a win-win for both of us. They get to use a more economic piece of equipment for that particular area, and we save $1 million on our contract because that's more efficient for us as well. Item 11 is an amendment to Curtin to take them off the Project 11 task for a short amount of time to dredge our docks at Barber's Cut, docks 4 through 8, as well as docks 7 and 8 for Enterprise. And Enterprise will be paying us back for that, for their obligation. And then item 12 is a big $42 million item, and that is basically our cost share for the work that's going to be done by the Corps of Engineers in Segment 3, Barber's Cut Channel. And I have to note that our team doesn't let go of any detail to the advantage of the port. And Charlie and Lori negotiated that amount down about $5 million because they paid attention to the details as to what's in the scope. So we saved $1 million on the first change order, and they reduced our bill by $5 million. And so every day this team is working very hard. I just want to make sure that they credit goes to where credit's due. And item 13 is a nominal amount for project management associated with some of these other items. With that, I'll ask for approval for items 1 through 17.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Second.
Yes, go ahead.
So, Rich, are other than the time that the dredgers went in and worked on our terminals, have they been staying on the job or they've been moving them around?
They've been staying on the job. There is an interaction with the contracts that the Corps issues, and we have to make sure that they're separated by 5 miles and that they're not putting into the same placement areas. And so one of the reasons why we are extending some of this work to Curtin is to keep them busy and utilize the equipment while those interdependencies take place. So we're keeping them busy, getting the most money out of the contracts that we can, or most production out of the contracts that we can. Roger?
No, I just wanted to point out, if we didn't already, you know, say it before, by taking on what we're doing to expedite this project as quickly as it, we're taking on an enormous amount of challenge, enormous amount of risk, you know, but working hard to make sure. I mean, we're going to have 5 dredges going at the same time here pretty shortly. When we did Project 10, we had 1 going the whole time. So we're managing that, and we're managing that very well by as some of the things that you see here today. But it's going to continue to be ongoing. It's not without risk, but it was also at, you know, a fair price when we awarded the contract initially. So I just want to make sure we're appreciating everything that's going on. There's a lot going on out there being managed each and every day, so I appreciate it.
That's good. So let me ask you one other question. Do we have any idea how many miles were in when they started dredging, or is there any way of knowing?
You mean of the first 11 miles?
Yeah.
Are we
yeah.
in?
Yeah.
Charlie in the room?
How many segments?
It will be done by the end of December. We've made great progress. The Corps has only accepted 1 8,000-foot section as being completely done, but we have like 3 or 4 that are waiting on the final surveys in the process. So the physical dredging is more than what can be used, but it will all be done near the end of the year.
By the
entire level out.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Just for Kiesel on 14.
Okay. All right, then all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, items 1 through 17 pass. 14 is, we're not going to have Tandy on 14. Got it. Okay, Jeff.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioner. It's a great day to be in the Fort Houston. As Chairman and Arthur pointed out, our detention facility has been very active this year, up already 18%, but I also like to point out that that comes on the heels of 2021, where we were up 17%. So the arrow has been pointed up for a couple of years now, and we continue to stay busy. As Roger pointed out, the general cargo facilities are doing extremely well. We have shipping every dock virtually every day here. We've been averaging 55 ships a day in port through all of our facilities over the last month. And as we talk about that, we've been very focused on that container terminal queue waiting to get into primarily Bayport. And for the last 5 months, that queue has rested around 25 ships waiting outside to get in. And over the past 3 weeks, we brought that queue down to 12. I think it was 12 yesterday, and I haven't seen the number this morning. But and there's a lot that contributes to that. You know, we swapped some cranes out at Bayport this year, took the 100-foot cranes out, took the 158-foot cranes in, brand-new cranes, and that berth has finally been commissioned and online and starting to pay big dividends for that investment because we're going to put some bigger ships in there. We've also had some, to follow his crew's credit, we've been improved some trolley rails on some cranes we were having problems with at Bayport, and that's gotten significantly better. We've also with the improved supply of labor from the ILA, they've been ratcheting up the supply of labor, and all these things have come together to make us more efficient. But also, there's a lot of speculation about what's going to happen in the import market and those kind of things. But we have seen extra loaders that were on our schedule. We've knocked those out. And when I say extra loaders, they're not part of a regular service that calls our facilities, but due to the volume, the ocean carriers have had extra ships that fall in those lanes. So we've knocked a lot of those extra loaders out by some pretty creative ways that we handled them. So now that queue has come down, and it without those extra loaders, it has the appearance of some softening in the import market. But John's group are the forecasters there, and he discussed that a few minutes ago. We've also seen the dwell come down for loaded imports, and there's an item today. I'm just touching on it now. We'll get to that in just a second. But that import dwell has come, loaded import dwell has come down from 7 days in the first quarter to 5 days now. So that tells us that things are starting to loosen up in the area in terms of chassis availability, warehouse availability, which directly impacts our facility. So good to see that as well. Next topic is, hey, as we move toward the month of November, Tim's been working very, very efficiently at getting the budget forecast together. We like the budget together, rather. We like to take this month and announce publicly what our intended rate increases are going to look like. So it gives the public some time to prepare for it. But certainly, we're talking to our ocean carrier partners and all of our customers for what's coming. But our Marine Terminal Services Agreement, which this body has already approved, which are in place at the container terminals, calls for an annual CPI increase, which that month that marks that 1 year, it was July, and it was 8.52%. So Tim will present that next month, but that's in place. It will go into effect on January 1st, and certainly we've been talking to everybody we can about just knowing that that is coming. And we'll also recommend next month to this body a 3% increase to the general cargo facilities, as well as Marcus's harbor fee, also looking for a 3% increase there. I'm going to move on to the agenda. If there are no questions about the rates, We have 11 items. Three of them I would like to highlight. First one's K3. It's a 2-year contract for repair of the warehouse doors here. This is just a continuing effort to keep aging facilities in place and maintenance and the contractors that work with us. This is a regular challenge keeping these facilities up. And certainly, we've had a lot of activity in these facilities over the last couple of years, and we need to address the warehouses.
Hey, Jeff, if I could ask a quick question on that. I mean, I understand wear and tear on the doors. Have we looked at alternative door systems or anything like that that maybe are more reliable or long-lasting? I mean, it seems it might be better to spend a little money up front. Or does that exist? Is it just?
I'm gonna defer to follow you, Roger Hose. You guys looked at the alternative system?
Not the doors today. No.
I understand they're bound to take a beating, but if they've got to be able, if it's one of our requirements on our food imports that they've got to be able to completely close and everything. I don't know if there's anything out there we should be looking at.
And when the users tear them up, so to speak, we go after those. So this is purely wear and tear, decades-old warehouses. And so it's a systematic, you know, it's just a regular maintenance item. Those doors wear pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Up and down, yeah. But anyway, good point. I'll leave that to Roger as an action item.
Sorry about that. I'm an idea guy.
Yeah. Well, and it's a lot of doors, too.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal amount. It's phenomenal.
It's not a small number of doors.
Okay, with that, I'm going to move on to K10, which is authorized a 15-year lease with 4 5-year options at Centerport, 61.58 acres. Hey, I do want to call out one of their staff, Rebecca Piller, has been an instrumental part in putting this lease negotiation together, and she did a terrific job here. You'll see there are $2.8 million worth of abatement set up there. We need to do some things to strengthen that dock, and they're going to strengthen it for us to handle more modern and heavy cranes to be able to facilitate what needs to be done there. This is a good lease for us. They're a good customer, driven by people. And K11 is the one I was talking about a second ago, the recommendation to put something in our tariff to manage import containers, loaded dwell import containers at the container facilities. And, you know, last year in 21, we had some peaks of 10 days as well. Wasn't sustained, but there were times when there were 10 days of loaded containers sitting in our container yard for 10 days. Our historical dwell has been 3.5 days. So as you think about our throughput and our ability to create capacity, when those boxes dwell for long periods, our capacity is tiny. And so the entire first quarter of this year, we were at 7.5 days, which is double our historical. So it's had a lot of impact. The impact to service level, digging boxes all the time for ships and for the road, it slows things down. So heavy congested terminals from boxes that don't move are not a good thing for us. So we're recommending and we're kind of late to the party here. A lot of the U.S. terminals in the country have already instituted things to handle dwell, and we're recommending a piece that has a toggle to it. There's a sustained import dwell and excessive import dwell. And excessive says that when dwell is at 10 days, we need to charge a little more and try to urge people to get their boxes to move faster. And the sustained import dwell is when boxes are lingering longer. Today in our facilities, as we speak, 12% of our imports have been there 14 days or longer. And that's about 7% of our facilities. Boxes are just storing, which means we're a cheap alternative to taking it somewhere else.
Yeah.
So we're introducing this charge that has nothing to do with our existing storage charges that go to the ocean carriers. It goes to the BCOs. It goes to our ultimate customers, the retailers, and those sorts of things. And so it's a charge that kicks in on after free time expires. We're not doing anything with our current free time environment. Once that free time expires, we're going to count 7 days, and then put this this $45 per day charge in. We're not sure how effective it's going to be. It's too low. We may come back in 6 months and ask to alter this thing, but we're certainly monitoring this. It's important capacity to us, and we feel like this is a necessary item. So, with that, I'll ask for approval of items K1 through K11 for any discussion.
So moved.
So you increased it from what to what? After the freight time, what does it go to?
So our source charge to the ocean carry, which should go to the ocean carry and back to the BTO for a 40-foot container, is $61 a day after freight time is expired. So we're tacking on this $45 charge that will go directly to the BTO, and it will $105, $106 combined between the two of them.
Does that accelerate after a period of time also?
No, it's not.
So they can just...
We do the excessive one, but this is the long well box. It's after 15 days, and I'm using that term kind of loosely. After 15 days, that $45 one sits in, and it's there every day. That's for the units that have been there over 2 weeks.
So, Commissioner, the intent is to encourage those boxes.
Absolutely.
Not to sit there.
Absolutely.
So if it's difficult to tell, perhaps, of if that is going to provide that incentive, if truly the goal is to get the box off and not...
Right. I understand the goal, and sometimes you have to just keep going up to get the goal.
That's why Jeff said we may have to come back with an adjustment or error. This is something that we feel like is kind of consistent with other terminals across the country, to be honest with you. So the goal is to get some of these boxes. When you have 12% of your boxes sitting on your terminal more than 15 days, that presents a challenge, and I think this is something that we need.
I agree. I just want to be sure it's enough.
For a period of time,
it just keeps jumping.
Let me make also one other point. There's one fee that we're permanently putting, and if you look at the wording.
This one.
Yeah, the sustained fee is going to be there permanently now on the BCOs. There's also this excessive, which is going to be used sort of.
They will coexist.
Right.
If dwell gets up to 8 days, we'll go to the excessive one, which is a lot more punitive, as you see it laid out here, than the long dwell. So they won't coexist, but we have the ability to toggle it back and forth with appropriate notice to the industry. We're not going to just show up and say, tomorrow the charge has changed. There's a 30-day notice in there, and we have the ability to get that out. But I will say, Mr. Newsom, we plagiarized this rate. We didn't collaborate with other courts about this, but you can see them published publicly. So we plagiarized this rate, and we started on the low side just to see how impactful it can be. And that's why we made them back 6 months and say, hey, we haven't moved the needle. We need to do a little more. But we're going to monitor this closely.
Now, you want to encourage them, but you want to keep your customers, too. You don't
that's
want to
right. Have well,
to
right. Right.
So it may have to be a step process in getting
this
stuff
to look at and getting the rest of these.
So you're approving the implementation of this rate as of December 1st, but the recommendation is that you give approval that if the well starts going up, the executive director has the authority to do the other rate and remove this one, so which we may have done, but we're not intending to do it this time.
Okay.
Well, we need a way to turn that on and off to manage the dwell if this exists in the future. So anyway, just
it puts us in a bind. Jump on them, we get hurt. We don't jump on them, we get hurt. So just ease into it.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, good. So 1 through 11. Next.
Okay.
Is, sorry.
Good morning, Chairman. Commissioner.
See you.
Representing Jessica Shaver this morning. People Vision has two items on the agenda. L1 is for the stop loss insurance. Stop loss insurance caps Port Houston's liability under a self funded medical plan for individual claimants during the plan year. The stop loss carrier pays the claims above that cap. Since 2019, we've utilized Aetna for this coverage, with the stop loss cap being set at $175,000. We've had between 6 and 9 claimants each year that have hit this cap. 2023, we're recommending that we're increasing the cap to $200,000, thus lowering the premium cost for our stop-loss coverage. We believe the premium savings are likely to offset the potential increase in any liability claims. After reviewing the four submitted proposals, staff is recommending that we remain with that Methodist insurance, as they did have the lowest pricing for 2023 at $1,766,591. Noted, Aetna is also our third-party administrator for our medical plan. So having one company serve as the third-party administrator and the stop-loss carrier simplifies the payment of claims over that cap. It makes us less likely to have to wait for that reimbursement. It's basically a credit to our claims costs. Item L2, we're recommending continuing with our current benefits enrollment software plan source. So staff is recommending the approvals of items L1 and L2.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, L1. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. I have four items today. I'm going to touch on each one very briefly. The first one is to award a contract for two mobile guardhouses. They look like telephone booths on wheels, a little bit bigger than that, perkier. But, for example, this weekend we had a drunk driver out here on the service road under 610 crash through our fence line, and these would be used and placed at that fence line where we have perimeter security has been breached, put a guard in there until we get the fence repaired. So we're asking for award of two of those. The next item is Motorola. Annually, we come before the commission, usually in January, and ask for a purchase order for Motorola radios, which is what we use. We have to use authentic Motorola parts. We went to order some radios the other day for the new RTGs, I believe 26 of them coming, and pending next month's meeting, we also believe we may have new headcount in 2023, and we went to order radios for those, about 70 radios, and we do not have enough money on our current PO. And with supply chain issues, we have a couple months lead time, so what we're doing in essence is moving our request that usually comes in January for our annual purchase order from Motorola. We're moving it up till now, requesting permission to go ahead and create that PO now so that we can order the radios, and obviously they're here in time. The third item is Houston Ship Channel Security District. This is our annual payment to them, commensurate with all the other terminals up and down the ship channel. And the fourth item is with OilMop. And OilMop is our standby hazmat responder. So we are the responsible party and have a leak. We simply call them and then come out and clean it up for us and get back in operation. To date, it was last year, about a year ago, Commission approved the initial $100,000 and the contract with OilMop. We're down to $40,000 on the PO. We have $60,000 in invoices, and it's time to reload that PO. Again, the nature of when a spill might occur, how often they occur, very hard to predict, and we may come back to you again in the future to add more money to this, depending on how many spills we have and frequency of them. And just a note on this one, we got a note just a couple days ago that OilMop is changing their name, be back in December probably with a name change for OilMop, but that one's in the future. So with that, I request approval of M1 through M4.
Second. Any questions and comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. It's approved. M4. Technology.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Ron Farrell. I'm stepping in for Charles. I'm just going to give him some. This one, we just have one item for approval. It's for the next generation collaboration of our SharePoint environment. This will be moving it to the cloud. It's an update of our port intranet, as well as making it more reliable and performance improvements.
And one. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Perfect. Thank you. Thanks, Ron. Okay, next, we're going to go into our executive session. So, Eric, you want to take us in there?
Court Commission, Florida Eastern Authority, Harris County, Texas, will now convene in a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct private consultation with attorneys. Deliberate regarding real estate, including the disposition of Bayport Terminal vicinity property, economic development negotiation or incentive, employment and evaluation of public employees, and security-related matters. Court Commission will reconvene in public session after closed meeting is adjourned.
Okay. For the Court Commission on October 27th. So we are back in session. Anything new, Roy?
I have a motion to make. I move to authorize the Port Authority to acquire property owned by Oda Fairmont, LLC, in the vicinity of Bayport Terminal on the terms discussed in executive session and authorize the executive director to do all the things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second. Okay. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Okay, great. I think that's the end of our agenda. Our next meeting is on November 18th, which will be it's a Friday budget meeting, so we'll be looking forward to seeing what's in store for us, or at least what we're projecting for next year, and hopefully we'll be a little closer than we were this year. But in terms of the budget, I remember last night talking about we're only going to project a 2 or 3 or 4% increase, and we're 71% better than our budget. But that's okay. I get that. We're not going to call our budget process.
But this year, I can just tell you up front, it's going to be more difficult to project than last year.
Yeah,
sure. Everybody says it's slowing down, but we're right here.
So we'll have those discussions.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a more complicated year to project for anybody,
yes,
given the current world, for sure.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I will call for the meeting to be adjourned. Okay. All fair to say, good. We're adjourned.